3 days after learning the shocking news of her husband's death, Yulia Navalnaya says she is taking over the mission of Russian opposition leader Alexei Navalny.
Но сегодня я хочу быть рядом с вами, потому что я знаю, что вы потеряли не меньше, чем я.
On Navalny's YouTube channel, she said she is standing on the side of Russians, telling them, "I know that you have lost as much as I have." Russian authorities said Friday that Alexei Navalny lost consciousness after taking a walk in the Arctic prison where he was being held.
That news rattled leaders around the world, but the reach of Vladimir Putin's repressive regime is nothing new to Russian-American journalist Masha Gessen. Gessen left Russia in 2013 when it became too dangerous for their family to live there. In their latest piece for The New Yorker, Gessen describes Navalny as Putin's most formidable opponent. Masha, welcome back to Here and Now.
Good to be here. Thank you.
And I do want to look towards the future, even as we remember Navalny's life, because we just heard from his widow, Yulia, who had been reluctant over the years to step into a leadership role. And yet here she is today on Alexei Navalny's YouTube channel, promising to carry on his work. What's left of the opposition now? And is Navalny's wife the best person to carry the pro-democracy torch in Russia?
You know, I don't know that we could really have used the word opposition correctly long before Navalny's death. In fact, maybe even before he entered politics, opposition in the way that you would normally understand it, which is some kind of organized entity or entities with access to electoral institutions, with access to media, that didn't exist. That hasn't existed in Russia for 20 years, since about 2004. But Navalny definitely built the closest thing to an organized opposition movement in Russia. And that is why he was Putin's most frightening opponent. He had the ability to mobilize people. He had the ability to bring people out into the streets. He had built both an investigative organization, which was also a media organization, and a political organization that had outposts everywhere in Russia, in every administrative district. And there are over 80 of them in Russia. So at its pinnacle, the organization was vast and as close to an opposition as there is. Now, most of the activists who put it together are in exile, and those who aren't are in prison. Mm. As to your question about whether Yulia Navalny is the best person to lead what's left of that movement, I think unequivocally, yes. There is no doubt that she shares her husband's political values, that she shares his unbendable will. And as we saw today, and this was really one of the first times that we've seen Yulia Navalny speak publicly, she's an extraordinary political speaker.
And yet the crackdown continues, because over the weekend, nearly 400 people were arrested in Russia simply for paying tribute to Navalny. Authorities removed the flowers that people had put at memorials. At this point, can Putin control the future of the movement more effectively with Navalny gone, or do you think what's left of his followers will just be galvanized?
You know, I'm not sure that the answer to that question matters. When we talk about 400 people who were arrested, we're talking about tens of thousands, possibly hundreds of thousands of people who came out into the streets to lay flowers, every single one of them risking arrest and imprisonment. So think about it. Hundreds of thousands of people willing to risk their very lives to pay tribute to Navalny. That is testimony to his continued political power, even from the grave. And at the same time, there is no mechanism by which a movement even that desperate and that vast can bring down Putin's regime. Mm. So as long as Putin is in power, which is probably as long as Putin is alive, it's a protest movement.
Do you have any doubt that Putin was behind this death?
I have zero doubt that Putin was behind his death.
And you write in The New Yorker that a dictator's ability to annihilate what he fears is a measure of his hold on power. What does all this tell you about Putin's confidence right now?
You know, a lot of people, understandably, but I think wishful thinkingly, rush to say that Putin's decision to murder Navalny or have him murdered is a sign of weakness. And I think they're confusing two things. One is fear, which Putin clearly feels in the face of Navalny and his political appeal and his bravery, and his sense that he's weak, or any kind of objective weakness of the regime. The regime is not weak. The regime is consolidated, and Putin's paranoia is part of what maintains its hold on power. The more paranoid a dictator is, the more likely they are to anticipate threats, whether they're real threats or imagined threats, and the more likely they are to stay in office until they're dead. We, you know, Putin in this sense is a direct heir to Stalin, a man who was as paranoid as he was cruel, and who stayed in power for 29 years, which Putin is closing in on, and whose reign ended only with his death.
You mentioned Navalny's bravery. I'd like to talk about that, because he did not have to come back to Russia to face prison. He was poisoned in 2020 with a nerve agent, was sent to Germany to recover. But when he came back to Russia, he said it was the best day of his life after 5 months in exile. He said he wasn't afraid. Help us understand that, what he meant, how that could be.
I think that the prospect of staying in exile and becoming politically irrelevant, not being directly involved in every single day of organizing and investigating and talking to people, I think that prospect was terrifying to him. He was a young man who had built an incredible movement, and he couldn't stand to be separated from it. Now, obviously, he didn't know that a year later, Putin would start a war that would force the entire opposition into exile, that the center of gravity of opposition media and opposition organizing would move abroad. So he felt that he was really separated from the heart of the movement. And so, yeah, going back to Russia was the best day of his life. He was coming back to his people. He knew he was most likely going to be arrested. I think that he also knew that there was a possibility that he would be killed in prison. He certainly knew that that was the project of putting him in prison, was to see him die there. I think he was hoping that there was a good chance that he would outlive Putin, even in prison, that he would be Russia's Nelson Mandela. That was his role model. Stay in prison, show your commitment to the cause, and emerge victorious eventually. But he also knew there was a good chance he was going to be killed. And what he said was, don't let that stop you if I am killed. He kept saying, I am not afraid, and don't you be afraid, the words that his widow repeated today.
So he imagined himself as something as a Russian Nelson Mandela, as you say, but he also had his critics, occasionally including you. In his early days, Navalny was kind of known for his anti-immigrant nationalism. As we spend time remembering his legacy, do we run the risk of idealizing Alexei Navalny? What do you think about that?
You know, it's crazy to say this, but I don't think there's any risk of idealizing him. He was pretty, by the time he died, and for many years before that, he was pretty much ideal. He entered politics not knowing a whole lot about politics or the world or how any of this works. He was not a terribly well-educated man. He was an autodidact who taught himself everything after he became a public figure. And early on, I think he made some major missteps, including making a couple of really horrible xenophobic videos. But his political evolution was like nothing I've ever seen over the course of the last 17 years. He has honed a social democrat, civic nationalist political platform. Very well articulated, very well thought out, and very far from his early days of appealing to people's resentment against migrant labor in Russia. The Kremlin has weaponized those early videos incredibly well. I mean, they just keep recirculating them on Western social media platforms, and all sorts of people keep doing the Kremlin's work of recirculating that. Shockingly to me, after his death, I mean, I have to say, I really don't get it. Like, when millions of people are grieving, to take him down and smear him with things that he left behind many, many years ago, more than a decade ago, there's just something so anti-humanistic about it.
Masha Gessen, I wonder if I may ask you, I've been wondering this, if his death feels personal to you, because for people who don't know your story, you know something about being a dissident. You had been a prominent advocate for LGBTQ rights in Russia. The Russian police have put you on a wanted list, accused you of spreading false information about the war in Ukraine. In the context of your own story, how are you reflecting on this news?
Yeah, I've actually been arrested in absentia in Russia. Look, I'm one of hundreds of people, approaching 300, who have been charged under this particular law. Some of us are in exile and being prosecuted in absentia. a bunch of people are in Russia and serving ridiculous sentences for saying the truth about the war in Ukraine. I mean, the maximum sentence under this article is something like 15 years. So the regime has done everything it can to communicate to all of us that we're not safe anywhere and that it will stop at nothing. Of course, the murder of Navalny, the most high-profile Russian in the world, does communicate this message that, you know, they will stop at nothing. They have no shame. They have no concern about their international standing. They are open and explicit murderers. On the other hand, that's not exactly news. They have been murdering civilians in Ukraine for, we're approaching the second anniversary of the full-scale invasion. And that is a better demonstration than anything of just the absolute cruelty and ruthlessness of that regime.
So now what? I mean, once again, political leaders around the world are furious with Vladimir Putin and Russia. President Biden says there's no doubt it was Putin and his thugs who did this. But what can the U.S. and Europe and others do? What should they do?
They should help Ukraine defeat Russia and bring down this regime. This is a very specific thing that they can do, that they should do, and that they haven't done.
Masha Gessen, a Russian-American journalist and a staff writer for The New Yorker, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you, Peter.